Welcome, welcome, welcome. My name is Scroobius Pip and this is the Distraction Pieces podcast. We're on to episode 12. Thank you very much for tuning in. I hope you all had a lovely Christmas break and thoroughly enjoyed our extra special Simon Pegg Christmas special. Yeah, it was great fun to talk to and the reaction has been amazing to watch online as well. So thank you all for that and thank you for sharing. This week's podcast I'm equally excited about. It's Killer Mike of Run the Jewels, who Run the Jewels are a rap act that have killed it this year. They got Pitchfork's Album of the Year, Rolling Stone Magazine's Rap Album of the Year. They've been absolutely clearing up, but Killer Mike has also been a very important voice, which I will get to, but I should do our adverts first. First of all, we are brought to you by Speech Development Records. That is my record label that gets mentioned in this podcast, in fact, featuring acts like B. Dolan, Sage Francis, War and Peace, myself, Polar Bear, Giacomo Brown. There's loads of good stuff. Check us out at speechdevelopmentrecords.com. We are also brought to you by onit.com. Now, Onit is a human optimizational website where they sell a lot of battle ropes and fitness stuff and supplements, but then they also sell stuff to kind of get the most out of your brain and thoughts and mind. So there's a thing they have called Alpha Brain, which I've used numerous times in the past, which is a nootropic, which it's really interesting developments. There's questions over it, but thankfully the people on it have all sorts of information on the website and tests and kind of showing that if you want to be skeptical about it, here's the open and honest truth. So check that out. They're good. And you can support the podcast by buying from them via onit.com/scroobiuspip. That's onit.com/scroobiuspip. So go and do that. You get 10% off as well if you do it that way. So check them out. But another way to support the podcast, I keep meaning to mention this more, is by subscribing. You can subscribe on Acast, you can subscribe on iTunes, at distractionpiecespodcast.com. If you subscribe, it really helps us out because it helps us with our numbers and figures and it helps us keep doing this for free. It's a way that you can help with the podcast, but you can do it for free. So basically, please go and subscribe. But onto this week's podcast, we have Killer Mike. As I mentioned, hugely successful this year as a rapper. Run the Jewels have been touring the world. And it was amazing to get a chance to sit down and talk with him. As you'll hear in the podcast, he went all out and kind of allowed me to come back and chat to him for over an hour after a sold-out show at Coco. So he was exhausted, but we had a good chat. He's also been, as I started to touch upon, he's also been a huge voice and a hugely important voice in the black community this year because of all the stuff that's been going on in Ferguson and just in America in general. And this podcast, genuinely, I don't think I've done one where I've been as taken aback by some of the things said and some of the views expressed and ways in which they are expressed. He's an amazing talker and happens to be able to rap like a motherfucker as well. So hope you enjoy this. I'll be back at the end to tell you what's going on next and what's on next week's show, which is another hugely exciting one. So yeah, see you in a bit. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. One, two, one, two. Yeah, we're good.
All right.
You sounding good? You feeling good?
I feel good, feel good. Do I need headphones too or what?
I've only got one pair.
No, I got a pair of Beats. That's why I'm asking.
No. Okay, you're good. I'll keep an eye on the levels and that.
Okay, no problem.
We're good. So we're rolling. I'm here with Killer Mike.
And I am rolling, literally rolling.
You've kindly invited me into your hotel to get this interview done.
Yeah, no Bill Cosby.
Yeah. Damn, that's some dark shit going on already.
God here. Bless you, man. God bless all Cosby, man.
But we should start off with what's just happened. You've just come off stage basically at Coco, and that was crazy. That's one of the hypest crowds I've seen.
Thank you, man.
On a London show.
That's a real compliment, man.
It's amazing.
I'd be wanting our shows to look like after a football game. Like,
yeah.
Motherfuckers just wilding. That's my goal.
Yeah.
But to take care of each other, not burn the city down.
I mean, that's what was cool. There was that kind of,
community feel as well. There was the rowdiness, but it seemed like everyone was on the same page.
It's fam. Like, I want kids to come out and rage and get that energy out just because, man, you got to. There's not a lot of places left in the world where you can just get it off like that. But at the same time, we want to make sure everybody goes home safe. You know what I mean? So
it's important, man. It's important. People struggle to admit and acknowledge that there's stuff to be angry about.
Hell yeah.
So people need, you know, it's important to get that out and to use that anger.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Where you can. But how do you find, or how are you finding it all at the moment? It's been a crazy year for Run the Jewels.
And it's only been 7 weeks in terms of the album. RTJ2 it's only been out 7 weeks.
Like, yeah.
You know, we just have not stopped the momentum from RTJ1.
Yeah. It's just been a constant flow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I wish, I don't know how it's changed. I can say the crowds are bigger. I can say the energy is more intense.
Yeah.
We don't have to tell you to put the pistol and fist up anymore, but.
Yeah.
Like, we haven't sat still to see. You know what I mean? If that makes any
completely.
Sense.
Completely. You'll get, and you're not going to, I was going to say, when you get some time to rest, you'll get to take that in, but you're not taking much time to rest.
Nah,
so
we're going
hopefully
home
you'll
for
get
three
to
four
back
days
at some point.
And, yeah, we go home for 3 or 4 days and we go to Australia. And then we leave Australia after the middle of January and we come home and get back to work, mess around, tinker around, see what's up.
The whole, I mean, you touched on the whole, throwing up the pistol and the fist. How enjoyable has that been, kind of happening? The fact that you've kind of, it seems almost unintentional, you've stumbled upon a great bit of marketing and promotion there. It's kind of...
Yeah, we didn't sit down and just be like, you know what we're going to do? This is going to be dope. You know, we just, L had an ill name and Run the Jewels. We went with it. The Pistol and Fist was something that is just dope. Nick Gazin is the artist who art editor over at Vice. He sent it over the illustration. We fell in love with it. And from the first one, that's just Zombie Hands, when we did the European release, it was skeletons of the Zombie Hands.
Yeah.
And then it evolved into the mummified Zombie Hands. So, you know, that's it. You know, you can't... Your work makes a symbol powerful. So the connection between us and the audience has made this symbol very powerful.
It's completely true. I always hate the discussion of what's a good band name. A good band name is attached to a good band. If you're
exactly.
a good band, then
exactly.
if you're a good band, then your band name is a good
exactly.
good name. You know that
exactly.
kind of happens naturally. So, I think it's that combination of the artwork just fitted and the album kind of followed it up. But I mean, how have you seen the difference? Obviously, the first time I think it's. Was your first stuff was on Outkast, on Stankonia, on the whole world, and on stuff like that. And then you've been. You know, you've been doing it a long time and building your experience. But
absolutely.
For me, I don't know if it's only over here, but it felt that hooking up with LP on rap music seemed to pull a certain amount together, and then Run the Jewels just seemed to follow that beautiful, crisp jab up with a quick combination, basically.
Yeah, it's like... You know, Elle and I were introduced to one another through Jason DeMarco, and we did rap music, and it was, you know, it was a classic album, perfect album. And he featured on Rap Music, I featured on Cancer for Cure. Then we hooked up and we did Run the Jewels 1 as a homage to the modern rap group, or the classic rap group in modern times. We wanted to replicate most strongly what I felt like EPMD had, like a real partnership, a real dope sound. And it worked. Like, our idea worked as the homage, but halfway through the tour, we noticed that we were opening for ourselves. I do 30 minutes, Ella do 30 minutes, and then we do 30 minutes as Run the Jewels. And we just noticed, you know, the Killer Mike fans were coming, give it up for L too. LP fans would come, give it up for Killer Mike too. And then there was these other kids that were just other kids.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, okay, yeah, the other stuff is cool. They jammed. It was like, okay, yeah. But when the Run the Jewels shit came on, man, they went bananas.
I mean, that's what's been great to see from kind of a fan perspective, is realizing that there's certain people who don't particularly know LP and Killer Mike. They know Run the Jewels.
Exactly.
And obviously, it's dope to have all of that collection, but it's great that there's that outside element that are just...
Like my daughter's 17 years old, man, and... There are kids in her school that know Run the Jewels.
Yeah.
That's what they know. You know, they know our dad's killing Michael.
That feels good, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That feels good, right?
Hell yeah, because you're pulling up to high school. You're 30-something-year-old dad. You don't expect a 17-year-old kid to be throwing up the pistol and fist at you. But that's, what's, that's what's happening.
I've seen babies on Instagram throwing up the pistol and fist. This is toddlers, all ages.
I said, Zoom, I'm just going to do an RTJ day where everything, like every 30 minutes, I'm just going to tweet a different picture. Because I got so many, I'll never get to do it if I just do one a day. But now I've seen babies, poodles, like no bullshit. I have a picture of a woman and her poodle throwing up RTJ.
That's the shit right there.
Yeah, man. And it, you know, for me, I grew up a rabid Wu-Tang fan. Because Wu-Tang, you know, as a band, was a dope band. It was a dope individuals. They had a dope concept. I felt like I was a part of something.
And I never,
every artist wants it, but I never knew that I'd have a family and a fan like this. I never knew I'd have this type of exchange, because the closest thing I've seen to it is Wu-Tang. You know, and it's an honor to be on that stage when those pistol and fists go in the air. It's an honor to perform and give up an hour and some odd minutes for y'all. It's an honor. And Elle and I really appreciate it.
I mean, it's great. I mean, that shows afterwards. It's weird because it's, for me, it's kind of become the norm in the rappers I see and associate with, but it still should be praised that you're there after the show, you're meeting the fans, you're having photos, you're hugging it up and kind of taking all that in. And that's, I don't know, it shows that you know, you do appreciate that. You're aware that it's blowing up, but it's blowing up because of these kids too.
And I appreciate these kids. Like, you know, a lot of bands blow up, groups, bands, you know, individuals blow up, and their fans resent it because they get further away from them. And the fans feel like their thing is being taken away. Well, we'll run the jewels. It hasn't been like that. Our fans have, like, I just read a crazy tweet. The fan was like, I don't want to get it wrong. It was crazy. I just pulled it up too. The fan was literally like, usually I'd be mad that, you know, my group is blowing up, but like, I'm really sincerely happy for L and Mike. You know what I'm saying? They deserve everything they get. And that's a real sentiment. That doesn't have anything to do with, hey, I just like this band. That has everything to do with, like, I really care that these two human beings who worked hard to do dope music are getting the opportunity to be congratulated and lauded for what they've done. And that's a hell of a sentiment. And I'm thankful, you know, for all of our fans for that.
Yeah, and I think that's got to be down to the fact that you've both, it's a cliche, but you've paid dues. You know? You've both been doing this long enough that it's kind of, you can't get mad when it's going this well. It's a beautiful thing to see.
It's a blessing, man. Like, if someone would have told me this is the way my book was going to be written, you know, I don't know if I'd have believed it.
Yeah.
You know, if someone had told me, like, I remember a friend telling me, he said, man, you know, you're not even a real band, like a real artist, to you 10 years in, you know, 10 years of pain and suffering and fighting and trying to be understood and recognized. And
it's crazy when that point comes, right?
Exactly.
Sneaks up on you.
Exactly, because you're not expecting it. Because by then, you're just like, I do good work, and I'm going to keep doing good work. And if it doesn't get recognized the way I think it should be, doesn't matter. I'm going to do good work. And then it starts to get recognized. And then you're like, oh, shit, I might can't go to the store.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I might need to figure out going to the store at an earlier time because if I go right now, I'm probably going to have to be in there 4 hours, you know?
Yeah. So. I think it's crazy as well, because I think when you've been doing it for 10 years or whatever, it's a weird thing that when something blows up, you suddenly also realize that you've got a back catalog.
Yeah.
You know, that these kids that are getting run the jewels, there's 4 or 5 albums for them to get and numerous collaborations,
man,
for them to go back over.
Man, a kid hugged me tonight, man, and he just said, Mike, man, he said, Cain and Abel off Sunday Morning Massacres, thank you for dropping that. Sunday Morning Massacres was a series of freestyles I did in 2008.
It's crazy.
That DJ Greg Street just compiled and put out this year. They were supposed to come out in 2008, but for whatever reason, I just didn't put them out. But like, that kid is jamming it like it's a brand new tape.
Yeah.
Like, he is rapping the lyrics. I don't even know the lyrics.
I was going to say, the crazy shit is when there's the lyrics that you don't, like, if they called that song out during a show and said, can you do this? You
wouldn't
be able
to.
Like,
but
I don't know how that goes.
But it was crazy.
Tell me how it goes.
Exactly, exactly.
I get that first line.
Like, I know those words. Why do I? It's like, oh, that's my record.
That's amazing, though. So you mentioned having kids. Like,
yeah,
how do you find that? How do you find that balancing it with it suddenly blowing up? Because again, another thing that's nice to see is some people it will blow up and they'll kind of sit at home and think, cool, it's blowing up. But, yeah. but you guys are hitting the road and you're hitting it hard to cement this and to say, look, this is blowing up, but this is going to continue. This isn't just a briefing. So how do you balance that with
Well, my children, their dad has, for the most part, been a rapper. Like, that's what their dad has done. And, you know, so this is what I do. And they get it. So when I'm at home, my time with them is with them. You know what I mean? I don't find many distractions when I'm at home besides running the business and being a regular dad.
Yeah.
But, you know, my dad, I mean, my kids understand that my dad's a rapper. And they get it because I'm not a rapper at home. I'm just their dad. You know, I'm not at home, you know, flossing and bossing. Like, I'm just at home as their dad. I'm taking out the trash. Yeah. I'm helping their stepmom wash the dishes. You know, I'm doing just regular dad stuff. And that sense of normalcy allows them to be able to look at their dad on stage and stuff as, you know, oh, okay, yeah, this is dad's job, but dad is still dad. So for me, you know, having kids is the most rewarding thing because it gives me something to be proud of besides myself.
Yeah. Have been to many of your shows?
Yeah. Yeah.
And how's that? Are you feeling, do you feel different as you're going on and knowing you?
Well, yeah, I temper the language a little, but then again, kids in my family can curse as long as they use it in proper context. You know, my grandparents started that. Yeah. But the kid, I'm proud at the shows because my kids get to see that dad's away, but he's away working and he this is what dad does. You know, they get a chance to see it. I bring him out on stage when I bring him out. You know, I got a chance. My oldest son is really into skateboarding. I got a chance to do Tampa Skate Park. Shouts out to Brian and the guys down there. I got a chance for him to come down. He just hung out and skated with his favorite skaters from across the world. Like, that's an opportunity a lot of working class dads wish they could give them sons. And I just think basically still just like a working class dad. So for my job to have these perks, like they sent some cool clothes and winter jackets and stuff to us tonight, and I just told them to send it to my kid's size, so now my kids get some cool stuff. So I like the fact that my job benefits them, and they like the fact that they get to travel on occasion and they get to see cool things. That makes, you know, it matters to me, you know.
So when you're home, I mean, we touched at all briefly before this started about your barbershop. I wasn't completely aware of that. Explain it a little. What's the?
It's called a swag shop. It's shave, wash, and groom. It's almost 3 years old, and I always wanted to own a barbershop for many different reasons. A barbershop was a center of the community in the black community in Atlanta, and the black community, period. But in the men's community, a barbershop is a very sacred place because working class men couldn't always golf. So the closest thing you had to a golf club was a barbershop.
Yeah.
You got to go have a drink, talk some trash, see what was going on in the neighborhood. But it really was a place where the community met and, you know, things got discussed. It really is a place where jobs are given. You know, I employ 9 people.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, you think about, oh, it's a guy, he raps, he smokes weed, he gets drunk, he's running around state. Like, yeah, but I employ 9 people. I'm responsible for 9 people's life. I can't, you know, I can't be a wild out guy all the time. So a barbershop is, to me, it's a first line of offense and defense to get stuff in the community and to keep BS out of the community. Like in my shop, there are no drugs sold in or out of my shop. There's no smoking in front of my shop. It's an environment in which men, women, and children feel safe and comfortable. You know what I mean? Kids get a haircut. They get a free Hot Wheels or Matchbox car.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Just to kind of inspire them to, this little toy you have, you can really work hard and you can get this car for real one day, you know?
Yeah.
So for me, having a barbershop, I wanted to stay anchored to the community in a different way that a lot of rappers don't. A lot of people, period, and they start getting money, start to separate from the community. And I didn't want that. There was a barbershop that inspired me called Rudy's. And they were out of the Pacific Northwest. They were up out of Seattle. And they started right around the grunge time of grunge. And Rudy's ended up being a franchise, some really dope artistic barbershops. And I just got off on the concept of marrying my influences. I love cars and art. I love photography. I love street art. And my barbershop, all of that represents it. If you're on IG, just go to swagshop_ATL. And look, you've never seen a barbershop that looks like this, you know? We got 2 female barbers. We got barbers from around the country. So I just wanted a cool environment that the community could come to. And we're going to have 150 of them ultimately. We're going to have 3 in every market in the United States, the top 50 urban markets. And I plan on coming to London, plan on getting to Australia, plan on getting everywhere we can because I like men's barbershops. I like a place where men can go and be guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's one of the last vestiges for masculinity. So
it's great that it's using that as you said, as a positive influence on the community and being an actual, yeah, having a place that isn't a community centre, isn't some kind of thing that people aren't going to want to go to because it's some government or some, you know, sports centre that is, you know, it's forcing, you know, a real place that you can just go and...
Exactly. Just go chill. Like, man, I keep, you know, when magazines, like, Mike, we want to send you magazines. No, I don't send them to my house, send them to my barbershop. Yeah. You know, I want to send you some beer. No, don't send me no beer. I don't need any beer. Send it to the barbershop. It gives me an opportunity to share with the community what happens here, too. Like, yeah. I pick up stuff on the road. I take it to the shop. I post it in the shop. I put in the shop the art that people give me on the road. Yeah. I put in the shop. I just want to inspire people to do for self. You know, I represent... You know, people say, oh, man, you know, President Obama got unemployment down to 8% in the United States. But black men's unemployment is not 8%. Mm. Black men's unemployment hovers around 12 to 14%.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very high percentage, you know. And these are also the people who are virtually tacked by the war on drugs. So, you know, what trade or skill can these young men go? My little nephews who are graduating high school who may not want to go to college. My own son, I wasn't satisfied with how hard he worked and didn't work at points in high school. So I didn't send him to a 4-year university out of my pocket. I sent him to a 2-year university to get an associate's degree and to get a trade in barbering. He'll come and work in the barbershop. Then when he goes to a 4-year university to figure out what he really wants to do, he'll have a trade to feed himself. You know, I want to be an employer. You know, I want to be able to provide jobs and compensation for people. So, you know, for me, that's another thing too. Like, if the entertainment class in my country can create a whole other stream of revenue, and I think we have a responsibility to do that in our communities. If your rapper or musician is only giving you a shout out, they're not doing enough for your community. If you say, oh man, he has a $50,000 chain, you know, that's cool. You could own a couple barbershops with that. You can own a restaurant with that. You can supply, you know, revenue and provide an economy and an economic ecosystem to your community. So that's what I feel compelled to do, and that's what I'm going to do. You know?
I mean, that's a really interesting point of how, I mean, particularly, we'll obviously get onto this, but with everything that's going on in America at the moment, particularly in the black community, it's easy for people to tweet about this, to get involved, to be political or social all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But I think you're right that that's not enough. Or even to the extent it's easy to go on a march. Yeah. It's easy to go on a march, and that's cool. It's important that people are marching and are getting on board. But
that's
not going to solve it.
Exactly. That's just part of the work. See, the march is a ceremony.
Yeah.
The protests are the ceremony. You know, when you get married, you want your wife in white, you want her walking down slowly, you want it to be a spectacle. It's a ceremony, and it's a time-honored and needed, and it's an honorable ceremony. But the real work happens pre and post that.
Yeah.
The real work happens with, you know, a lot of the civil rights movement was paid for and underwritten by black millionaires who had made their way in business.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Herman Russell, God bless the dead, he just died about a week ago. He was an 83-year-old real estate developer and builder in Atlanta. He had probably the largest black development firm, and I know in the Southeast and possibly in the nation.
Yeah.
He was very quiet, man. He wasn't on the front lines marching, you know, but you'll see pictures of him with those leaders because he was the one underwriting, you know, buses to get people places. He was the person that I live in a neighborhood. I grew up in a neighborhood called the Collier Heights in Adamsville. And the Collier Heights was one of the first communities and one of the largest, most prominent communities built by black people for black people after World War II.
Yeah.
Well, he got a contract to do Fulton County Stadium, which was a Braves stadium where they played in the Falcons. And because that contract enriched him, he built right in that community.
Yeah.
So I grew up 4 streets behind him because he and other rich black people like Dr. King's father lived in that community. Ralph David Abernathy lived in that community. Because they were there, my school system was better.
Yeah.
Because I lived in a real mixed community. We lived on the front, on the working class area. So because of him, I went to better schools. I was educated better. So I've been a good fortune of this. So I understand the importance of business people. Mm-hmm. I understand the importance of good people that do great business, that have morals and ethics. You know what I mean? All business people aren't evil and bad. So it's needed in my community. We need less people talking about what I bought that depreciates, and more people investing in things that appreciate, that appreciate your community.
Yeah.
Jamal Mashburn is an idol of mine, not because he played basketball well, but because the man owns 83 restaurants, you know, TGI Fridays, things like that, I believe. But he employs hundreds of people. Magic Johnson brought industry to Atlanta, came to Atlanta, opened Starbucks, opened movie theaters. You know, he gave people jobs, and I think that that's what we should be doing. And you get that profit and you enjoy it. My wife drives a BMW.
Yeah.
You know, she buys, you know, she's getting a Louis Vuitton for Christmas, and that's cool. And with that said, I help 9 other families be real families. You know what I mean?
So do you think that's something that's dropped out in recent years? Because it feels the urge or natural urge and reaction to give back to the community when you got successful was a huge thing in the 70s, 80s, and 90s when basketball was becoming the biggest sport in the world and a lot of young black Americans were getting to suddenly make a lot of money. Why do you think that's... Do you think it's to do with hip-hop and how rap is that it kind of...
Well,
a lot of people are making money to make money and to have money rather than to...
Well, and that's fine, but, you know, I think people take give back as charity. I'm not talking about charity. I'm talking about industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm talking about creating an industry.
Completely.
You know, a friend of mine has a clothing company, and, you know, I won't name his company because I don't know if he wants this known, but he has a clothing company, very big clothing company. And with that said, he also has a printing company.
Mm.
So he could print your clothing line.
Yeah.
You know, having a clothing company is as easy as outsourcing people in Asia. You're coming up paying a designer, shipping your stuff back to America, I have a company. But that's different from I bought an old printing company, kept the people employed, they're employed, and now not only do I have a clothing company that is making me money, I'm also having something that's made in the USA and giving U.S. citizens jobs.
Yeah.
So when I'm talking to you, and it's nothing against charity, but... I'm talking about creating an industry, creating an industry, and that's what I see as important.
Having that motivation to do so,
absolutely.
That motivation to create industry rather than, more of the straightforward...
It's impressive to buy nice stuff, but it's more impressive to provide other people with the opportunities to earn and buy nice stuff.
Definitely. Obviously, we're talking about... community and skirting around a lot of things. One of the things I wanted to talk to, and I've been doing a few tweets and Facebook things recently, and I feel that with everything that's been going on in Ferguson with Eric Garner, I feel that it's jumped out to me as an observer from across the pond that your voice feels like a very important one at the moment. And the reason for that is I guess partly because of the Run the Jewels stuff maybe, but it feels like you've got the ear of the black community and the white community. And I feel that the problems going on at the moment need attention from both sides. It's
absolutely
not something that just the black community can heal. It's not something that just the white community can
heal.
It's
a human problem.
Yeah.
You know, the human problem is that as humans, we have allowed ourselves to get comfortable in boxes that we were put into. We've allowed ourselves to be cordoned off like animals. We've allowed ourselves to be separated by sex, by religion, by race, by creed, by color. When at the end of the day, we're only human beings. Like, you're white with long hair and a narrow nose because at some point humans migrated out of Africa and came to a colder climate, so their nose needed to be narrow. You know what I mean? Hair needed to be longer to keep their face warm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And recessive genes reduce the pigmentation. That's pretty much the only difference. We're still both human beings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We civilization both started on the continent of Africa. So we are as much the same as we are with small little differences. And with that said, no human being should live under the tyranny of government if promised freedom.
Yeah.
You know, and America prides itself on the story we're told from the time we're 5 years old up, that we broke free from the tyranny of taxation and monarchy.
Yeah.
You know, we broke free from that.
Yeah.
You know, there was a little riot called the Boston Tea Party that we celebrate.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And my thing is, if promised that, and my people, black people in America, only 51 years into that promise, because we had to fight. We won ourselves out of slavery, got our full rights after the antebellum period. All of that was wiped away. Then we went back into a series of Jim Crow. Then we had to fight for our civil rights again, which not only won our civil rights, won the civil rights for more people than us.
Yeah.
Got those civil rights. And now for the last 51 years, we've still just kind of been B-level citizens. And I'm tired of being a B-level citizen. I was promised everything the United States Preamble, Bill of Rights, and Constitution gave me, and that's what I want.
Yeah.
And I don't want that just for me. I want it for my neighbor who may not agree with my lifestyle. I want it for the guys who don't agree with me, period. Because we deserve that based on this is what this country promised us. And even if a country had not promised that, I am a human being and I have inalienable rights that were given to me that are God-given to live as long as I want to live peacefully and not hurt others, to procreate, to live, to love, and then to die peacefully. I shouldn't have to be a battery for a war machine. I shouldn't have to try to figure things out outside of the realm of my real possibility. So for me, it's important for me to not only speak as a black person, because I know I'm black and I have a responsibility as a black man to speak, to say, hey, you're looking at unemployment as 8%, but excuse me, Mr. President, it's at 14% for me.
Yeah,
you get what I'm
saying?
I have that responsibility. But bigger than that, I have to come to the same conclusion that Martin King came to after he earned civil rights on the behalf of melanated people. What he discovered was the same conditions that are creating the oppression that suppress this group of black people that are in America. They suppress white people in the Appalachians that are poor. They oppress, you know, the Asians that were used to build the railroad systems. They oppress the Native Americans whose land was stolen and put on reserves. And he started understanding that this really is a thing of poverty. It really is a thing of a perpetual war machine. It really is the tyranny of government in a different way. And that's where his focus shifted. So for me to keep arguing just the black side doesn't take the fight where it really belongs. The fight really is a human fight against a system.
Yeah, completely, completely. And it's fascinating because just touched on that. I find it interesting over here, I think that it might be a slightly different fight if, for example, the police were armed over here and things like that. Because I think over here, the poverty line isn't as heavily weighted in race. You know, I think that over here, there's a lot of white people who would end up having the same things done to them, the same stuff happen.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And then I think, yeah, I don't know. It wouldn't be as easy for the media to push it as just a race thing, as just this or just that. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's important that I speak to both sides and all people. You know, I'm a human being and I can empathize with the fact you're white and we share some of the same experiences. So I have empathy and I definitely have sympathy for people that suffer. And I think that, you know, there are a special set of BS things that black people in America go through. There's a whole other set of rules for us. And with that said, we have the responsibility to organize on our behalf, but to also be voices and advocate for people globally that are treated like us. Because it's, you know, in some other countries where there's no black people, it's a whole other group of white people that for whatever reason get oppressed the same way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we are to be the examples of what can potentially come good out of that. You know, how can you organize, plot, plan, strategize, organize, and mobilize your way out of it? So, you know, I'm down for advocates and allies no matter what race, creed, or color.
Yeah. So what do you feel, it's a huge question here, but what do you feel the solution is or a path in that right direction? I found it really, I went to one of the rallies over here for Michael Brown.
Yeah, thank you.
And I mean, it was a strange experience for me because I felt I needed to be there to show my respects, but equally it kind of felt, what is this doing? And I argue with people a bit because it sounds like I'm saying the only solution is violence. But to me, standing there and protesting in the way that a system prefers you to protest when what you're protesting is that system seems somewhat redundant to me.
Because
it's not just the police that is the issue here. It's the people that have cleared the police and everything
absolutely.
The way up. So we've, particularly in England where it's all cleared and sanctioned, if we've had permission to come and protest at this point, it's the system that you've got permission from is what you're protesting against. So again, I left feeling I'm glad I went, but I also feel it needed more. It needed something else.
Well, part of it is ceremony again.
Yeah.
Part of it, you need the ceremony because people need to experience camaraderie.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, completely.
You have these beliefs. I have these beliefs. We live thousands of miles from one another.
Yeah.
But at protest and rally, you get to see the camaraderie.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm a black kid that's getting the shit kicked out of me by the cops 3-4 times a year, then I feel very lonely. I feel like, man, this shit is happening. Why is this fucking just happening to me?
Yeah.
But if I show up at a rally, a protest, sanctioned or not, and see people who look like you, I understand I have allies that look like the people I perceive as being my oppressors. And I understand that from a human level, it doesn't allow that grain of hatred to grow past the system.
Yeah.
So what remains the hatred is the system and the upholders of the system. So you need the ceremony of protest, sanctioned and unsanctioned. You need these ceremonies because it allows people the opportunity to congregate. It allows people the opportunity to see. And it shows government and these institutions the number of sympathizers that come after that.
I think that's one of the things that's key. I think the government and the system is showing that, but also it equally shows with the protests in all the different states across America that it's not a Ferguson problem.
Absolutely.
But then in England, in Europe, that
absolutely.
Is, again, as you were saying, that it's a human problem.
Absolutely.
That it's not people, it's not an American problem.
Absolutely.
It's not a Ferguson problem.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I guess
some
that's
of the most touching things I've seen is you see pictures from Palestinian children.
Yeah.
That say Black Lives Matter or
we
understand, you know what I mean?
It's crazy.
Syrian children, you know what I mean? You get to see children in parts of Africa. It just matters because, man, it sure doesn't feel as lonely. You know, it sure doesn't feel as lonely. And a lot of times that hopelessness is what will have a child strapping a bomb to their chest.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, completely.
If you wipe out the ability to hope, anything is up for grabs. But if you leave the ability for people to see that there's people advocating for you, that even if you don't see them on a daily basis, there are people that care about your campaign, then you maintain hope so that you don't have to go to the extreme of violence. Now, the other thing is, and I'm in agreement with you, if the system does not change by the will of the people, then it is the responsibility of the people to attack and take down tyrants by whatever means necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's interesting. I mean, I think the Palestine thing is interesting as well, of people showing support in all different areas of the world, because I think it's easy as well for Americans who maybe aren't that moved, or, you know, acknowledge it's a problem, but kind of think, well, still, we're still living in America. We're still living in a good... There's good
exactly.
But it's great to see things like that are saying, like, there's hot, terrible shit going on in Palestine at the moment, but that doesn't make what's going on in America any... less important or more acceptable. It's like, yeah, there's some bad shit going on, but that doesn't mean that this is fine and this should be ignored and moved on from.
Exactly.
So easily. I think another a term I think is getting misused or misinterpreted. Again, I've been trying to stay quietly attentive to a lot of what both sides of the argument are saying. And I think something I've seen a lot of white people getting confused about is the term a white privilege. So I'm seeing a lot of kind of people who are working class or work hard saying, I've not got a white privilege, I work. But I think it needs to be explained how much of a misconception of what
white privilege doesn't
is.
Mean.
It's not about getting all the breaks or this.
Have the benefit of doubt.
Exactly.
That isn't afforded to others. And it's not saying, oh man, you're bad, you have white privileges. No, you have the benefit of doubt. There's certain questions like when a white mother puts a coat on a child, it's, you know, go outside, come back in. And this is a cartoon I saw from like 20 years ago. Go outside, come back in, you know, don't talk to strangers, right? The stranger is the danger, When a black child goes outside 20 years ago in the day, go outside, do not talk to strangers, do not get in the way of policemen. Why, like it turns into
a
whole grocery list of things that no child should have to think about.
Yeah.
A child should only think about, do I have on my coat? Do I have my mittens at?
That's
it. That's simple.
Yeah.
You know, that's ideally, that's what every child, but man, black children don't have that. You know, not in America. Like we have a grocery list, especially our boys, that our boys have to learn by the time they're 12 and 13. Because you just want them, you want, forget kidnappers and killers and gang members and all the other fear things that are thrown at you through television. You got to worry about the police and the people your parents pay taxes to sanctioning your child's murder.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's just a different set of worries. So, you know, white privilege isn't saying, oh, you got it better than me, we hate you. No. It's just saying, hey, you get a break.
And there's because perception completely. Yeah,
because of perception. And since you do, I need you for an ally.
Yeah.
You know, I need you for an ally,
yeah.
You know, because you understand what it means to work hard. You know, you're a tradesman. You get it, too. But I need you for an ally over here. The police chief in Richmond, California, which can be a very violent place, can be a very wild place for black and brown people in particular, stood up with a sign yesterday, it said Black Lives Matter. You know, that's pretty weighty.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty heavy because he is breaking ranks with policeman nationally. He isn't castigating police. He isn't saying I don't believe. He isn't, but he's simply saying that the life of the people I police matter.
Yeah.
Like, think about that. This is a policeman saying the life of the people I police matter. You know, and if more policemen had that attitude, you would see more cops thinking before a trigger is pulled.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the police need more. I think that
it just blows my mind that that's a statement that needs to be made. You know, I mean, that is a hugely big deal. But when you actually strip it down and go, damn, that should be a given. That shouldn't have to be made. But at this point, it does.
You know, police don't get out of their cars anymore because they're only one. There should be two police in a car.
Yeah.
Police should be required to get out of their car for a number of hours and walk and meet people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, in an ideal situation.
Going back to community, as you were saying, the police being, and again, it isn't the way in the UK anymore, but it used to be. My granddad was a policeman, and it's, you know, I'm proud of that.
Exactly.
Because he was a good policeman. He was doing good shit.
Exactly.
He was one of the good guys.
And exactly.
It's not to say that there aren't any of them anymore, but you don't get to see if they are or are not because they're behind a windscreen.
And our police are becoming more like special forces. They're even arming them like special forces.
Yeah.
You know, when police.
But they're not training them like special forces. And that's, again, a huge concern from this side of the pond, seeing that we do have armed police over there, but they are trained.
To the T.
They know what they're doing. So some defense of some of the stuff that's been going on in America has been, someone is panicked in somewhere, something like that. It's like, that's not defense. That shouldn't be
that's
an option.
Fear.
And again, it comes back to white privilege there of if the excuse is that someone panicked, they wouldn't have panicked in the same way if that was a white face that was there. There would have been more of a controlled
approach,
I guess.
There was a white protester early on in Ferguson that said, at 18 years old, I shot a policeman with a BB gun. I'm still alive.
Yeah.
Think about the power of that statement, you know.
So
I was reading a passage by Noam Chomsky today that just basically said Reagan was a vehement racist, and he used the and this is Noam Chomsky. This isn't the black rapper saying this.
Yeah.
Who wrote Reagan?
Yeah.
He said he was a vehement racist, and he used the war on drugs to criminalize. Just being a black man, and eventually that pours over into other ethnic groups, but you know. That we have had a cold race war going on against black men in my country since they landed there.
Yeah.
You know, and we didn't come voluntarily. You know, someone came and got us. But there's been this fear, this paranoia, you know, since then. But if Nat Turner moments were going to happen, they would have happened again and again by now.
Yeah.
Black people are just trying to be normal, regular citizens, enjoy their life, live a good life, and die happy, the same as everyone else. But it feels like we're being cast in a part of a play we didn't volunteer to be a part of.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be your goon. I don't want to be the bad guy in your story. You know, tell your story. Go find your
real bad guy. We just want to live and exist. Yeah. We have the same human conditions that everyone else has. When people say black on black crime, what do you mean black on black crime? Black on black crime happens because you have crime amongst the people who live near each other.
Yeah.
You know, if you live in an all white community, burglaries aren't called white on white crimes. They're just burglaries. You get burglaries, you get murder, you get that in any community. But for the state to use that as an excuse to sanction murder, nah.
It's that crazy weird need to categorize only in certain situations. It's something in hip hop that's always annoyed me with female rappers.
Yeah,
there's just some dope rappers out there, rappers. But they will only be referred to as female rappers. Yeah. They won't be, you know, this and that. And it's a similar thing, as you said, with black on black crime. There's other than that, there's just crime.
Just crime.
That's just crime. It's kind of, let's go back to kind of some solutions. And there was a song 3 years ago now, I think, by Abi Dolan and Jaziri X called Film the Police. And it felt like something that was, it's been painfully irrelevant repeatedly over the years.
Yeah.
But something that I feel has been a backlash of that, again, in what I've been observing online, is people saying how a film in the police clearly isn't going to help because of the clear video footage
in Garner
case. It's like the clear video and then been...
Well, this is what's going to happen. Either these cops are going to start being held accountable and you're going to start seeing prosecutions happen and cops that are abusing power going to jail so that other cops will adjust their behavior, mm-hmm. or you're going to start seeing people attacking policemen in the street.
Yeah.
And it's no way around it.
Yeah, completely.
Those are the two alternatives. And if you don't believe me, they were just a black and a white cop were arresting a guy in Baltimore. They were being a little too rough with the guy. A white guy walked up to the cop and snuffed him. You know what I mean? Tried to knock him out.
Yeah.
In New York, some of those sloppy Times Square cops were in the middle just looking crazy trying to arrest someone. Someone threw a barrier at the cop and hit it.
Yeah.
Like, people are frustrated. And everybody has been lied on by a cop. Mm. Everybody's had a speeding ticket lie or your jaywalk. Everybody's in enough distrust so they, you know,
it's
believable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When a system becomes that, the proletariat is going to push back.
Yeah.
Repression breeds rebellion every day. If you didn't study civics or world history, you skipped over this little thing called the French Revolution. You know, if only one set of people seem to have it good, then the people on the bottom are eventually going to uprise.
Yeah.
You know?
You see, it's an interesting thing because history, I think, plays a huge part in it. And I've always found it fascinating. In the UK, I think, with terrible protesting, action. In change, whereas somewhere like France is amazing. And I always remember reading a while back when they tried to bring a wheel clamps in France, a clamping cars if they're parked illegally.
Yeah, yeah.
The French, as one, put glue in the clamps, so they were broken. So instantly, they had to stop doing it
because
they kind of rose up. And the thing, the more I thought about that, was realizing that England, our history, is going out as one and conquering.
Yeah.
There's no great history of going against those. I mean,
yeah, the empire has always taken versus
the... We've always been part of it. Whereas the French have got that more a civil revolution and, element to it. So what do you think the kind of... The choices there in America, is it an inevitability or is things like... Because again, I think the dismissal of the impact of film in the police, I think it's misplaced because I think the reason we're seeing everything now is because of people filming the police.
Absolutely.
There's not been a sudden... I mean, there may have been a slight increase, but there's not been a sudden crazy increase of police malpractice.
Yeah.
It's being caught on camera now.
Absolutely.
And it's being brought into public eye and addressed.
Absolutely.
Therefore, as much as it's fucking horrific to see video evidence of someone being choked to death, ignored... Yeah. It's being seen and it's being addressed and causing
absolutely.
The noise that's happening now. So I don't know. I feel it's wrongly dismissed in that way because the more it's in the public eye, even if the prosecution isn't there, it will end up being the catalyst to another solution.
Yeah, it needs to be filmed. It needs to be filmed because if you do ever burn, if you do get to the point where you're burning police stations down, you need to be able to pull up the YouTube and
that's
say, look at these
reasons for this. Yeah,
yeah. You know what I mean? This is the reason for this.
I think the other thing I've witnessed a lot of is the backlash from people defending the police, and it's something I've kind of argued with on online a lot. Again, I keep referencing Abi Dolan, but he's speaking a lot a well about this online recently, and on one of his posts he said, if you watch this video and your first reaction is to defend the police, then you're in the wrong place. You know, there's something wrong with your yeah. mind. And I get where people are coming from, because again with the whole film the police thing, I don't think all police are evil or bad, but yeah. that's not the issue at the moment. That's not what's being discussed. What's being discussed is the ones that are doing
Absolutely.
Terrible shit and Absolutely. Getting away with it. So I don't know. It feels it needs to be clarified to them. It's not saying fuck the police as such. It's not saying that. It's saying fuck the crooked police. Fuck any police yeah, who may not be crooked but are riding with and not taking action yeah. on crooked police. Or
yeah, like common sense seems to be something that a lot of cops leave in their lockers.
Yeah.
I watched a video once. There was a kid who was just walking by a protest. He wasn't in the protest.
Yeah.
It might have been a protest for a Palestine or a Muslim community of some sort, but he's just a black kid who was walking by. Security guards or police come up to him, grab him. He's like, I don't even understand what's going on. They then mace him. He really doesn't. And all yeah. the time, people are walking with him and the cop saying, he is not the right guy. They didn't do anything.
Yeah.
He didn't do anything. And the cop is just so dead set on being his instincts being right that it caused that kid to suffer. If you look at Eric Garner, at the time that the cops were trying to arrest him, people were telling him he didn't do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And at some point, if you're a beat cops who used to walk the block would have had enough sense to say, hold on,
yeah.
let me figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
Because it's stupid to arrest someone and say, let the courts figure it out, when you're the first line of offense and defense and you could have solved that problem there.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you don't have the common sense to solve that problem there, you don't have the common sense to be policing.
Yeah.
And if your answer to one hand is under control by three other cops, if your answer is to a man you already have in a prone position because he's on his side and his hand is out saying, I can't breathe, to keep an illegal chokehold on them,
yeah.
my gut instinct says, I wish somebody would have walked by with a 38 and put a bullet in your head
yeah.
and kept walking. That's my gut instinct. But going to my civil instincts say you should not be a cop
yeah.
because your ego and your narcissistic instinct to say you didn't listen to what I told you overcame your ability to preserve human life
yeah.
and get to proper understanding. You know, and I'm like you. I pray that the protest and the civil way works because the alternative is rarely easy.
Yeah.
They're always more of you than they are cops.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're always more of you than they are government. The proletariat is always bigger than the rulers. And at any given time, those guillotines can swing the other way.
Yeah.
Your neck can be loaded in it as easily as ours.
Yeah.
You know, and that's my thing. Like, so my thing is, do it now and do it right while you can, because when people get fed up, they're going to burn everything to the ground.
Yeah. I think it's something you touched upon there of not being fit to be a cop is incredibly valid, because, again, it feels like there was a time when the police were the great and the good. There's people now I know who... I used to work in a record store. There's people who applied for a job in the record store, didn't get a job, ended up joining the police force because yeah. they couldn't get a job in a record store. It's like that doesn't feel like the people that we should have
yes.
as running the streets there. So, kind of, is there an answer to that? Because I mean, at the moment, obviously, the police, rightfully so, are being very vilified. So I can't see why anyone like yourself or any, you know, people with a straight head would want to become a police officer.
And that's
a negative thing, right? Surely yeah. it'd be better if the police were full of people who were more reasoned and were more. But at the moment, fuck, I wouldn't go near that uniform. You wouldn't want that uniform.
Two of my cousins are currently police officers. And yeah. they're good cops, and I respect them. And it's a hard job. A friend of mine, she's about to enter police academy right now.
Mm.
And she's going to make a great cop. She's fair. She's honest. She's stern.
That is the solution. Yeah. Rather than, you know, again, that's a long-term thing. But surely one of the long-term solutions is...
to get good people.
Good people from all communities.
Exactly. Policing. You know, you need people from the community, even if you can't police in your direct neighborhood, because that's a conflict of interest. We need policemen that are from where the communities are from.
Yeah.
We need people that understand working class, understand poverty. We need people to understand race in a different way. We don't need someone who just got back from Iraq, couldn't find a job, and is now being told to police regular citizens the same way you policed in war.
Yeah.
It's not right.
Yeah.
You need to have people that understand the psychology of the neighborhoods they're policing. Yeah. That means as a cop, you should be seen at the PTA meeting, you should be seen at the corner store, and you should be seen in your patrol, on your patrol, not just on your patrol. Because when you're just riding through on your patrol, you're just like a monster that comes through.
Yeah.
You're perceived as just somebody here to pick somebody up. You aren't seen as a savior. You aren't seen as an ally because you don't ever get out of the car.
You're not a person. You are just a cop. You are exactly that. Which is the vilified thing right now. So with the new year approaching, what do you see as the key progressions and changes at this point that we should be, that a regular individual should be trying to make? Hearing about all the different, the base level community stuff with your barbershops and things like that, do you think just more things like that are something that the regular person can do?
Absolutely.
And to take responsibility for themselves and their own community?
You have to do locally what you can do.
Yeah.
You got to vote locally, you got to think locally, you got to act locally, you got to buy locally, because that's what, like, Ferguson is 70% black.
Mm. Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
70%. Like the mother of that child said, I lived here my whole life. Darren Wilson moved here.
Yeah.
She has more rights to be in that community and to determine what goes on. But if you're in the community, you have to be active.
Yeah.
Your police chief or sergeant should know you. You should have a community board and push for a community advisory board or a community liaison board for your police department. Well, Mike, how do they make that happen? You vote for an alderman. You vote for a councilman. Make them do it or vote their ass out.
Yeah.
You know, demand that your policeman, you can call, my wife told me that, you can call the police. You can have the police come to your child's school. That child, your child's school, the PTA meeting, the policeman who polices your community should have to introduce himself to the parents at the PTA meeting. Parents should take their ass to the PTA meeting, Parent Teacher Association.
Yeah.
The only way these problems are going to get solved is if they're solved at a local level and they grow nationally.
Yeah.
You know, our Constitution and our Republic is made in a way so that federal government can't just shoot mandates down to state and local laws, because that disrupts the sovereignty of states. But it can go the other way. But it has to remain a grassroots movement, and that on a local level, you have to become so active that you cannot be ignored. And that changes the fabric of the way things work in your community.
Yeah,
I truly believe that, because I have a dual, you know, with me, it's going to be either or. We're going to work it in the way that the system allows us to, because we're a free republic that's based on voting, that's based on, you know, it's a democratic republic, or we're going to do what our forefathers did and burn it to the ground and start over.
Yeah.
You know, those are the only two ways. There's no other way. Either you get it right within the way the system has allowed for us to do it right, and that means the system and allies within the system have to comply, or we burn it to the ground and
start.
That's
why, I mean, that's why the crazy, the bloody mindedness of the system is, it's got to bend and it's got to break, surely, because the best solution for everyone is the first solution.
Absolutely.
There, rather than it having to be a public uprising.
Absolutely.
Which, again, it feels more and more on a global scale. It feels more and more likely and closer to that.
Absolutely, because people are tired.
Yeah.
People are tired of fighting wars and they don't know why.
Yeah.
People don't even know why they hate each other anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even know why the police hate black men anymore. It ain't like we out there shooting at the police.
Yeah.
Which we could be. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You could sit there at the store, man, and someone could lay on the top of a roof, take an AR-15 and put a bullet through your head.
Mm.
It ain't hard. But the fact that that's not happening in the community shows you this community ain't no hyper-violent community. It's a community without jobs. And you as a policeman should be advocating to bring jobs back to your community, because that makes your job easier, because then you're just patrolling the TV factory, making sure no one's stealing the TV.
Yeah,
you aren't worrying about 30 kids standing out on the block trying to find excitement.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, completely. Well, I mean, we're getting up to the hour mark, so I think, as you said, people are tired, so I'm going to start to wrap things up and let you get some rest.
I thoroughly enjoyed this.
But let's end on what next year holds for Killer Mike and for Run the Jewels? Is it well, a focus straight on for more
Run the Jewels? Run the Jewels, man. You know, it's Run the Jewels. I mean, Killer Mike's need to rap, want to rap, need to perform, need to have my ego stroke is all supplied through Run the Jewels.
Yeah, completely.
You know, don't fuck up something that's working because of your ego or your narcissism, you know.
Yeah.
I love being on stage with my partner. I love selling out shows and kids enjoying it.
A big shout out to LP as well. Because I've only got a one mic set up. Otherwise, I would have been pushing to speak to both of you boys. But next time you're over, we've got to get...
We'll do it together.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But Run the Jewels.
That's it. You're back in the UK in June, or you're back in Europe. You're touring everywhere again.
Well,
I know
we're coming back here because we sold this show out and we got a bigger show to do.
Yeah, yeah. But, so you're going to be at the Forum, I believe, in June. You just smashed it at Coco. Where can people keep up to date and know what's going down?
At Run Jewels on Twitter, at The Real LP is for LP, at Killer Mike GTO, like the car GTO, at Killer Mike GTO on all social media for me.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, thank you very much, man. It's been great talking, and thank you for having me.
As a car guy, let me tell you too, man. You got a badass Jag. Folks know I'm not usually a Jag guy, but when you're in London, man, you got to roll like the Londoners. And I'm telling you, the Jag you are is a hell of a car.
I'll do my best. Well, thank you very much,
love,
man.
Love, love.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
That was the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 11 with Killer Mike. And I think you'll agree that was just amazing. I recommend if you're not familiar with his work, go and check him out. Even if you're not into rap, he's someone you need to be following and listening to on Twitter and Facebook and everywhere else. If you listen to this on the Acast app, we will have put links up as we were speaking to his Twitter, to his website and everything else. So that's a good way to listen. I'm enjoying the Acast app. I'm enjoying the reaction from you lot to the fact that when you're listening on the app, there's visuals coming up and links to give further detail on what we're discussing. And on a podcast I like this week's one, I think that's hugely important because it's a big topic. But anyway, on to next week's show. And next week is the first show of the new year, and it's one that I'm very excited about as well, because we have Phoebe and Will from a website called FullFact.org. And FullFact.org is a charitable organisation, and their job is to basically fact-check stuff that newspapers claim, stuff that stupid websites like Britain First claim, and numerous other, basically all the stuff you see on Facebook, and you kind of look and go, that doesn't sound legit, but thousands and millions of people are sharing it because it's printed and there. They check all this stuff and fact check and get the right statistics. It's a hugely important thing. They've had laws changed. They've had things, because I won't go into too much detail because you should just listen to next week's podcast. I don't want to give things away, but the amount that newspapers and blogs are just taken at their word is a frightening thing in today's society. So a charity like FullFact.org is hugely important, and we had a really good chat. So check that out. Subscribe now if you can. As I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, it really helps if you subscribe and get involved in that way. But yeah, until next week, this has been the Distraction Pieces podcast. I'm Scroobius Pip. You can hit me up at Scroobius Pip Yo. That's on Twitter or Instagram, or at facebook.com/Scroobius Pip. See you next week, guys.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.